Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're going to be talking with Janice Rogers, Vice President of Human Resources for Diversified Communications, Ruth Lund, VP of Organizational Development for Legacy Supply Chain Services, and Judith Stark, Corporate Quality Assurance at IDEX Laboratories in Westbrook, Maine. We also are going to be having a conversation with Elise Tipton, who is the Development Director for the Center for Grieving Children. So why would we have all these folks on one show today? Because we have a special show that we're going to be talking about employee volunteerism. Such an important topic, such an important thing that people need to be doing. And some organizations that we're going to talk to today even pay people to go do it. And there is a trick to talk about it. So I'm sure everybody would like to volunteer and be paid. Why is that important? Well, we're going to start today with Janice Rogers from Diversified Communications. Janice, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for
having
me.
The studio's nice and full today. We have people in. It's great. I love it. You know, talk about employee volunteerism. Tell me about the program that you have. Tell me why it's important, why you think people should do it. Give me the whole rundown.
Sure. Well, at Diversified, two of our corporate values are caring and community, so we really encourage people to get out in the community and volunteer. And to that end, we actually do pay people to volunteer. We allow them to take up to 20 paid hours per year to volunteer at an organization of their choice. And I would say that allowing people to do this really makes them feel more empowered, more engaged at work, more willing to give back at the office because they know that the company is supporting them in giving to their community.
You know, today we're hearing a lot from Generation Y that they want to make sure that community involvement is important, mm-hmm. That they want to be at companies that really care about their community and care about what's going on. Do you see that helping with retention at your organization, helping with, you know, keeping people engaged?
Right. I do. I think it's almost an expectation coming in with some of the newer hires that we have that they want that flexibility, they want that time, and they want to be able to give both at work and outside in the community to organizations that are important to them. So I definitely see it helping us with retention and with the morale and engagement in the office.
When you're looking to hire individuals, is it something that you talk about, especially corporate social responsibility? Is this something that you have a discussion about at the hiring?
We would go over that through the hiring process and then in the orientation process as well. We want everybody to understand our philosophy around corporate giving and corporate volunteerism so that they know that they have the opportunity to participate when the time comes.
Elise, you're a individual who benefits from, and your organization benefits from, the Center of Grieving Children, this volunteerism. Tell me why it's important to a nonprofit organization. It seems obvious, but why is it so important to an organization to have volunteers and what they do for the organization itself?
Well, David, I will be happy to state unequivocally and for the record that the work of the Center for Grieving Children would not be possible without our volunteers. And to back up that statement, I'll just tell you a little bit about how the center works. We use the model of volunteer-led peer support for people who come to the center seeking grief support. We serve children and families. We have additional groups for young adults and for bereaved parents. When people come to the center, and they come on a weekly basis, they meet in peer groups of individuals who are similar to them in ages, children with the same ages of children, adults with adults, and also are their peers because of what they're experiencing. Mostly they have experienced the death of a loved one. We also have another program, our Tender Living Care program, and those children and families are living with the serious illness of a family member. In the room with the folks who are meeting in the peer support groups are facilitators. These are volunteers who have taken a 30-hour training with the center, an extensive 30-hour training. It goes over 2 weeks, And they are the people who make sure that within the room, everyone feels safe. They're feeling emotionally and physically safe so that it's an environment in which they can express their feelings and in which they can talk about their experiences. And here's where the support comes from, hearing from one another, being listened to. It's a great gift. And the two facilitators in the room are making sure that everyone has a chance to speak and be heard without judgment. And that's how the center works. That's the core of our program. So that's where the volunteer component comes in primarily. Of course, we also have additional needs for volunteers for our events. We couldn't do our events without volunteers. For our office, for maintenance of our facilities, all kinds of projects going on. I could talk to you more about that, but that's basically what I meant when I said we couldn't do our work without volunteers.
No, I think they're critical, and certainly that's an area where these organizations have taken the time and invested the money in to make sure that happens. Jess, I'm going to come back to you for one more question.
Sure.
You know, one of the questions that comes up when somebody says, okay, I'm going to go volunteer, or I'm going to go and work for this organization. Mm. What if it's an organization that doesn't fit within guidelines, or are there guidelines of the organizations? Can anybody work at any volunteer organization? Is there any set rules? Because I think that's important for people to understand, is it a, you know, I get to pick whatever I want, or are there set corporate guidelines around that?
We've always let people make their own selection and decide where they want to volunteer, and it's across the board. It can be in school systems. It can be at the center, the Maine Women's Fund, the Maine Children's Cancer Program. There are just a wide variety of places that employees have chosen, and I can't think of one that's ever been turned down or been an issue. So it does allow them the freedom and flexibility of choice.
No, I think that's great. Well, over at IDEX, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, and we're talking with Judith Stark from IDEX now. Tell me about your organization and why you think this is so important.
IDEX started a program a few years ago called the Global Volunteerism Efforts Program, or GIVE, and it allows full-time employees 2 paid full days to contribute to a nonprofit organization in the community. IDEX is a veterinarian diagnostic company, so we sometimes volunteer at like some of the shelters, or I've also volunteered at Center for Grieving Children, a large variety of places that people have volunteered.
When you set up this program, or the organization set up this program, what was the initial impact when it got launched?
I think people, you know, first we went to the meetings and they enrolled it, and people are going, what's this about? But pretty quickly, people started volunteering, and it just spread a really more positive environment. It gives me personally a more meaningful, purposeful life. You know, we tend to work at our desks and we're doing our daily grind, but to know that tomorrow we're going to volunteer, say, at a place like the center, which I found to be such a magical place, it's just really gratifying.
When an employee says, hey, I'm interested in volunteering, do they have any set procedure they need to go through? Do they need to request the time? What are some of the processes you've put in place so that if an organization was out there and saying, hey, this is interesting, something I might like to do, you know, tell me some of the things you've put together and I'll come back and ask the same question. You know, what are some of the checks and balances in place from an HR standpoint,
right,
or from a management standpoint?
It's pretty easy. We have an internal place for electronic forms called the Introdex, and we submit the form to our manager. It's a pretty easy form to fill out. Like I said, it needs to be a nonprofit, and usually it's during work hours. That's some of the stipulations, but like I said, it could be an animal or a human or environmental. People have done projects on islands, soup kitchens. I mean, it's pretty broad, but once you submit the form to the manager, she'll approve it or he'll approve it, and you're set to go. It's written off on your schedule, and you're good to go.
Janice, do you have the same type of process set up?
It's quite flexible. An employee needs to have their supervisor's approval in order to take the time, but once they have that approval and know that their work's going to be taken care of, they're allowed to take the time as they need to schedule it. So during the work hours, it's not usually a big deal. What I've found, though, that's very rewarding is that people also want to take time outside of work hours to volunteer and help to coordinate different activities, whether it's a charity run for an organization or you know, working at the soup kitchen after hours to help serve food. So it goes well beyond the workday.
When we're talking about, Elise, using volunteers during the workday, your organization runs a normal work schedule. Talk a little bit about that in terms of, you know, could somebody volunteer in the evening? Could they volunteer on the weekend? How does that kind of work?
Well, the volunteer facilitators who I described, I kind of call the evening shift. They come in at weekday evenings because that is when the family groups meet. So that, in terms of working hours, serves them pretty nicely. As far as other projects that we have going on in the office, we work with different groups of employee volunteers, and we work with individuals to find out what are their time constraints, what's most convenient for them, and we try to design customized projects that serve us but meet their time frame. For example, if somebody, and I know that some of the IDEX volunteers did this, has some time to do painting, we happen to have two rooms that needed painting, so those folks came during the day, and the rooms, I must say, look a lot nicer as a result. So we're very flexible. Now that the weather's warmer, of course, we've got outdoor gardening to offer people. So that's also been a great project to see people out doing.
What you're seeing as a result from the individuals who take place in this on the volunteer side, what do you see them at the volunteer work? Do you see they seem happy? Do they seem, you know, more relaxed? You know, what exactly do they talk about work?
I am glad that you asked that question, particularly in light of the feedback that we hear very consistently from our volunteer facilitators. And it's that they hear others saying to them that their work at the Center for Grieving Children must make them sad, must be depressing, must be hard to handle. And what they say back is that it is the opposite, that they feel wonderful about the work they do. They feel that it's life-changing to be able to be a part of these, the work of that these children and families are doing as they're moving through grief, what we call their grief journey. So I think that that is pretty high testimony, because it's coming from the people who are experiencing it, about their work there. I will also say that our organization works very hard to support the volunteer facilitators because of the nature of their volunteering. When they come in, they have approximately an hour in the evening to kind of decompress from their job days, to leave the day behind them, and to become present to what they're about to be doing with families and the stories they're going to be hearing. They then work with the families and the children for about an hour. Everyone's doing activities. The kids are maybe doing some art. The adults generally are engaged with each other in discussing. And after that hour is finished and the families come back together and say goodbye and know that they'll see one another the next week, the volunteer facilitators go upstairs, and at that point we have clinicians who work with us in support of these volunteers. There's another full hour that they have that they can discuss and process stories they may have heard, things that may have been personally unsettling to them, anything that they need to do to make sure that when they leave, they're not leaving in a terribly burdened way. And so I really credit the folks at the Center for Grieving Children who designed that model and to take care of our volunteer facilitators so well.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly, direct-pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are having a special show talking to a whole bunch of people about corporate volunteerism. And we're talking with Janice Rogers from Diversified Communication, Ruth Wund from Legacy Supply Chain Services, Judith Stark from Corporate Quality Assurances, and Louise Tipton from the Center for Grieving Children. You know what, Ruth, we haven't had an opportunity to talk with you yet. I'd like to know, first of all, if you could tell me a little bit about why volunteerism is important to your organization and how you go about processing that to all the employees.
Sure. Well, at Legacy, it really starts at the top, David. Our CEO is passionate about our organization making a difference in our communities. As a matter of fact, our vision is impacting lives and developing leaders. So it really flows out of what's the purpose for this organization, past being the best supply chain services out there. We want to be the best for the world as well. And so that's a really pretty big vision that our CEO holds close to his heart. And how that is translated to our leadership and our leadership development and our employees is we're looking at developing leaders that are full spectrum, that have the basic business needs, skill sets as leaders, but then actually have the type of environment that helps them lift their heads from just the day-to-day business and look at the landscape of how they're impacting others inside the organization, outside the organization, in our communities, and then even to that really big, heady stuff of leaving a legacy and future generations. So it's a much bigger view of leadership and with a much bigger purpose than probably a lot of organizations are plugged into right now.
You know, we were talking in the last segment about the importance of it coming from the top down. And so I think, you know, again, you're speaking to how the CEO all the way down through executives and directors and VPs all have the same vision. And I think that's an important element that when you're talking about the employees understand that it's from top down, it really resonates. Do you see any challenges that sometimes happens with an organization when they look at this and they say, oh boy, I can take some time off? Is that something that you've ever had an issue with the organization, or have you been able to make sure that those are an important aspect to it?
Yeah, that's never really been an issue for our company. Our employees do a lot of their volunteering on their own time, so that's, you know, that's not a huge issue for us. It's really creating a culture that's placing a value on it, that's emphasizing it, that's bringing it forward all the time. So it's sort of, I hate to use the word expectation, but it's just kind of part of of how we do business together, how we live together.
You know, I was talking to Judith and to Janice about making sure that the culture of the organization is clear. And I'll pose this to all three of you as a question, and we can just go one after another and give an answer. When you have a culture that talks about volunteerism, that it's important, what do you think that the employees get from this outside of just the fact they get to go volunteer? I mean, what do they think about the organization and why it's important to them and to the organization? So if you'd like to start, go ahead.
Sure. I think that employees recognize that the company is giving them an opportunity to develop themselves outside of what they do on a day-to-day basis and to share their time and their knowledge with other groups in the community. And it has really been impressive to see some of the grassroots efforts that have taken place with our employees. They not only volunteer for a whole host of different nonprofits, but when the need arises in our different communities, and it may be the Portland community or it may be the communities that we serve as a business, they rally to put together fundraisers, to send supplies, to help impacted individuals in the areas that we serve. So, for example, with Hurricane Katrina a few years ago, we had a group go down and work with a home building group to build homes in the region. With Hurricane Sandy last fall, we happened to do an event in New York right around that time, and we sent a whole bunch of supplies down to a hard-hit community in that area. So they really take it upon themselves to rally and to lead that effort and not just wait for the leaders of the organization to point them in that direction.
Ruth, I think, and by the way, that was Janice. I want to make sure that everybody knows that was Janice. Ruth, you talk about leadership, and maybe that plays into it, but what do you see as that cultural change inside?
I think there's two elements from my perspective. One, from a cultural perspective, David, we're looking for leaders that are aligned to that kind of a vision, you know, out of the gates, in order to keep this sort of culture healthy and growing for years to come. So we look for that kind of intrinsic alignment, and then when that's there, and you have folks coming in that see that bigger vision, the level of engagement, commitment that they feel is different. So I think that it helps the organization, but it also, that individual feels a sense of alignment with their company and where they're spending a whole lot of time and effort that's bigger than just doing the job, the specific job that they've got. The other part of our corporate culture that I think enhances the lives of our leaders especially is we expose them to need that they might not necessarily be exposed to otherwise. And so I can't tell you how many times coming out of a legacy leader orientation event, which was actually, we just had one recently, we bring all new leaders into the company twice a year. So we cover all new leadership at these events twice a year, and the first thing that we do with them is bring them into a day-long elbow-to-elbow community outreach opportunity so that they get to experience that together as a team. And for some of these folks, they think it's a neat idea, but they haven't really put their toes in the water personally. And coming out of this opportunity and seeing the sort of impact that this group of people has had together on a nonprofit is just a huge eye-opening. And so many leaders have come back to us and said, that sparked me to do this and this and this. So not only is it alignment for folks that are, you know, potentially currently involved in community outreach personally, but then it's also we get to expose newer leaders to the power of reaching out and making a difference in their communities.
Now, I think it's excellent that you start right off, right at the beginning, and making it an impact so that somebody that joins the organization truly sees the culture. It's one thing to say it, right? And we all say, oh, we mean it. No, we really, really mean it. But it's another thing to actually say and go out and really impact it. Judy, what are you seeing over at IDEX?
Yeah, I think just to expand upon what Ruth had said about a spark, internally at IDEX, they've always helped different groups, like if there was a hurricane, we manufacture testing kits for water, and they would donate the testing kits for water to make the water safe for the people, or rescue dogs and animals. And we would read about it on the Interdex, and, you know, from your desk, you're like, geez, that's really cool that they did that. But now what we're able to do is we're able to give, and then it sparks another person. You pull somebody into your project, mm-hmm. and then, like at Christmas time, we packed bags of food items for the soldiers in Afghanistan. We got in a big conference room, and we laid out all these donated foods, you know, and candies and gum, and we packed these stockings, and we're working with different groups in the organization that we normally wouldn't get a chance to, and it just keeps trickling one and after the other. So it pulls more people in, and you're looking for new things. We're going to do opening ceremony at Try for Cure in July. So it's just, you know, the things are published, and then if you can help, you can join in, and you do as many things as you want. And sometimes we're doing it on our weekends, like, you know, and that's fine. We're really enjoying it.
No, I think that's great. I mean, we're talking about three organizations that truly have made an impact, you know, a true impact in the organization's culture, but it also is an impact to the community. It's an impact, you know, to make people feel really good and help people in need. Elise, tell me a little bit about, you know, the culture you see that helps the organization yourself. In other words, you have employees at the Center for Grieving Children.
We do.
When you see all these volunteers coming in, that companies really care, how does that make the organization feel?
I think that it helps us feel appreciated in the community. We also, as I've said, need these folks. We need them to get our work done and to run our peer support groups, but we also need them to, in effect, become ambassadors in the community. They become, once they understand how the center works, they become people who are referral sources for our families. They may invite their friends and family members to center events or to support us in other ways. They may invite those same people to become volunteers, and we may be led to another very important core of our volunteer forces, board members. We have a board of 25 people. They give an enormous amount to us in terms of time, hours, other connections through the community. They help leverage support sometimes from their own workplaces, their employers. So for us, the volunteers are not only, as I said, helping us get our work done, they're going back out and finding other ways to make the center stronger.
You know, I talked about in the last segment, we didn't ask Ruth about some of the processes you've put in place to really get your organization aligned. Tell me some of the things you've done at Legacy that can really get aligned with people understanding the value of volunteerism, other than just setting it up, but some of the processes in place you've put.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, what I mentioned earlier as a kickoff, we're looking for leaders that are aligned to this kind of thought process. We bring them in and have them serve side by side with executives in our company at these offsites, which, by the way, just to kind of underscore the value of that, exposure does breed compassion, and I can't underscore that enough as far as an organization's ability to make or to expose their employees to the power of this. It's huge. So we have that event. We also have a community outreach committee, so that we partner with our different field locations as they're looking to do outreach events. We have matching funds for them. We have ideas to encourage them. So we support very specific projects that our sites are doing across the organization. We making a difference is one of our six core values. So we talk about how that looks, not only with just community outreach, but how are you making a difference in the lives of your colleagues, your customers, and your community. So that's very much part of, it's part of our measurement system. We measure behaviors against our values for our leaders. We give them feedback on that. How are you doing with that? So it's, just to give you a sense, David, it's very much part of all of our structure as an organization, and reinforced by feedback because we have that expectation that we're all moving in that direction together.
No, I think it's great. We're going to come back for the next segment, and we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of the boards, which and making board members, because I think that's an important aspect of it. And then I'm going to ask each of you, setting you up, for an example of a time when you volunteered and what you got out of it and what you were able to provide as feedback to your organization. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
I love Maine, and I'm interested in Maine news.
But I want it quickly and simply.
All in one place would be good.
You've just described a great website.
Really?
MaineNewsSimply.com.
Maine news.
Three words. MaineNewsSimply.com. Go to the site and I'll explain. MaineNewsSimply.com collects news as it happens from news sources all over Maine. It's compiled and presented online in an easy-to-read format that keeps you up to date in just minutes. MaineNewsSimply.com is for people on the go who want the news of Maine fast, anywhere, anytime.
I'm on, and you're right. This is exactly what I asked for.
Discover what thousands of Mainers already have. Maine News Simply, the free online website and daily newsletter loaded with headlines and stories from close to 50 news sources.
Maine News Simply looks great, easy to read, current, interesting. I like it.
Try it today, and while you're there, sign up for the newsletter. It's all free. Three words, MaineNewsSimply.com. The smarter, faster way to stay on top of the news in Maine.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We're talking a lot about volunteerism, corporate volunteerism, paying for corporate volunteerism. And I know anybody who hasn't listened to the first part of the show is going to themselves, what? Getting paid to volunteer? That's awesome! So let's continue our discussion with Janice, Ruth, Judith, and Elise. Look at that. I got it right, Elise. You know, it's funny, and I've known you for the longest of everybody here. That's the real humorous part of this. All right. So anyways, we're having a great discussion about it. Before we left, we talked a little bit about, Elise, you mentioned about board members. So first of all, to set the stage, could you kind of tell individuals listening out there what exactly a volunteer board is? Because people may think to themselves, oh, I'm going to be a board member on a, you know, a big corporate board, and it must be big perks and a big salary and all those sort of good things. So tell us about a volunteer board.
Well, we would like to remind people that there are perks associated with being a volunteer board member for a nonprofit. However, unlike being a corporate director at a profit-making corporation, it's unsalaried.
But you get more in return when you give back, right? That's the truth.
It absolutely is. We have, at the Center for Grieving Children, we have 25 board members. Those folks serve for 3 years. They are eligible to serve for 2 terms, at least consecutively. And they make sure that the organization runs. Their chief function is governance of an organization. That's how it works for nonprofits. But in addition to that, they are the folks who help us with our events, who help us bring in financial support from other organizations, who listen to what's happening with our programs and give feedback on that kind of thing, listen to what's happening in the world of fundraising, which is the world that I inhabit, and give us feedback, not just feedback in that world. They are critical to leading us to people who would be interested in supporting the organization financially. Governance, administration, That is what board members do for the organization. I hope that what the organization does for them is to give them back all of what we've been discussing in terms of a volunteer experience, those feelings that are associated with doing something that makes you feel good about the fact that you've been able to provide a service for others. And I think that our board members will say that they feel very good about serving the Center for Grieving Children and our families and children.
No, I think that's great. Now, just a quick yes or no. Does board volunteerism count in terms of their time, in terms of the organizations, or do they have to do actual volunteer work? Does that count as volunteer time at your organization?
I think it might be separate.
Okay, separate.
Yeah.
Okay, separate for you as well?
I would think it would be separate as well.
And Ruth?
Well, we actually don't log the volunteer hours. We just encourage it and make the opportunities available, but we don't track it.
Okay. All right, so the reality is that this is volunteer time that people will take after work to work in the evening and maybe or weekend and be on a board or help with events like that. All right, so let's talk about, as I said, experiences of how you've helped in a volunteer setting. Maybe it's with the Center for Grieving Children, maybe it's not. It's okay either way. I'm sure Elise will be, you know, looking at you at the time if you're not, but that's okay. But the reality is that I'd like to hear that, because I think listeners think to themselves, what is it really all about? And if somebody could explain some examples, it would be helpful to the audience. So why don't we start with Judith?
Okay.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the volunteer work and some background behind it?
Yep. I have a great experience to share. My first exposure to Center for Grieving Children was about 2 years ago. United Way Day of Caring came in. They did a lunch and learn at IDEX. And then I learned of the center. And, you know, I thought, well, this is great. This is, you know, where I want to spend some time. So I did some volunteering. I was one of the painters. We painted a rocking chair. We did some cleaning and straightening up the rooms. And then last December, me and two coworkers, Joyce and Paula, we went and set up a Santa's workshop, because the center gets a bunch of toys and great donations from everyone. So we took a room and we transformed it into a Santa's workshop. We took furniture, we wrapped pictures, we took artwork that the kids at the center had done, and we strung it off the ceiling, and it was so fun. We had holiday music on, we were there all day. It turned out pretty awesome, I think.
It certainly did.
Well, there was kind of a ripple effect after that. In my non-addicts life, I'm also a fitness instructor, and I teach Zumba specifically, and I live in Kennebunk, and don't laugh at that. Because
it's too easy to laugh, but don't laugh,
because we wanted to do a community event to show that there is some good that we do. And because I had just donated my time at Center, I suggested we give the proceeds from this benefit in January to the Center for Grieving Children. We got local donations from restaurants, barbershops, you know, raffles. All that proceeds went to Center. And the best part was we got notified by Corporate Zumba Fitness in Florida that they were going to donate $2,500 to the center. So it made our event turn into almost $3,500 to the center. And, you know, one great experience at the center, because of a program started at IDEX, led to another great event. And, you know, we raised all that money. So
no, I think that's great. And I think that makes a huge impact on your bottom line, right?
Absolutely. To learn of that donation coming all the way from Miami, where the Zumba headquarters is based, was surprising and gratifying. And I will say that this event that Judith and her friends put together would certainly have been considered a success even without that donation. But we were very grateful for it.
We were really happy.
I think that's great. Janice, what story do you have for us?
I've been able to volunteer in a variety of different ways since I've been at Diversified. I've been there for 18 years, so I've had some time to do that. And
congratulations,
thank
by
you.
The way.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's great. It's a great company. I've been able to volunteer at the Center for Grieving Children in the past, doing some office support work. I have worked at Wayside Soup Kitchen with a group of peers, serving soup and dinners to homeless people. And most recently, I've been volunteering for Junior Achievement, going into the classroom and teaching Junior Achievement classes to second graders, and also volunteering with the Maine Women's Fund, who is a group that's helping to establish economic security for women and girls in the state. What I have seen, why I think volunteering, one of the reasons I think volunteering is so important, is all of these organizations that I've worked with have a staff of maybe 3 or 4 or 5, and I'm sure Elise can probably second that. They need volunteer support. The volunteers are such a critical part of making their efforts a success, and they really need people in the community to be able to give that time, not just money, but give that time and effort to make their organization successful.
Ruth, what story do you have?
Well, I have one that's pretty near and dear to my heart because it actually led me to my current career. Back when I had stepped out of my career to raise our daughters, I became involved with a nonprofit ministry and pretty quickly started working with them uncompensated in a high-level ministry position. And that went on for about 12 years. And during that time, you know, not only was I working in my passion and doing something that was having a big impact in the lives of a lot of people, but it was also developing me. And I didn't even realize it. It certainly wasn't the intent behind it. I was doing something I loved and felt very purposeful. But at the same time, I was growing as a leader and as a developer of leaders. And that led me, when I went back into corporate America about 5 years ago, it led me into my current position. And so, you know, sometimes we don't even realize some of the intrinsic benefits. This for me was part of my stepping stone. And now I get to work with a company that's multiplying efforts of leaders across the country and actually North America. So it really, you never know what some of the outcomes are going to be when you stick your neck out and you look to make a difference.
You know, it's interesting as I listen to the stories and as I also think to myself about how organizations are taking the time to really make this an important aspect. And, you know, sometimes you hear about companies being these, you know, companies being evil and companies being organizations who only think about themselves. And this truly is an example of how that's not true, and that really company is just people. It's just people bound together by an organizational structure, and that's truly what it is. And that it really shows that at the end of the day, people do care, and that they're really putting it forward and making it happen. I know you obviously volunteer. You're part of the volunteer network, at least. Tell me a story. Tell me a quick story. We have about another minute before we go to break, minute and a half, and tell me about a quick story of something you got out of it.
Well, I do volunteer, and I think the opportunity that I had fairly recently that I would choose is to become part of the Maine Medical Center has the Hospital Elder Life Program. The acronym is HELP, and the chief reason for that program is to prevent the onset of dementia among older patients. And that is a fairly comprehensive volunteer program in that you must train and shadow, and you're visiting with older patients. You have a series of small activities that you can do with them, and the idea is that you're engaging with them so that they are helping to stay present and focused in where they are and why they're there. And I very much enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the challenge of it, the good training that Maine Medical Center provided, and all of the times that I met individually with patients.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit.
go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Cascabe is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Cascabe, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascabe.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. You know, we've been talking a lot about corporate volunteerism here today, and I know that, Elise, you want to do a shout-out. So I'm going to let you, do that right now, since it's a perfect opportunity.
Well, my shout out is to United Way for their Day of Caring. That is an event that in this area, United Way of Greater Portland and York County, those are the two chapters that the center works with the most and receives support from. So I'm shouting out especially to them. But Day of Caring is a national event that United Way's put on across the country. And it brings employee volunteers into many different places, mission-driven nonprofit organizations. They do all kinds of chores and projects, maintenance and cleanup and sometimes cooking and warehouse updates. I'm looking at this particularly for Wayside Food Programs this year in Portland. That's what they did there. They had in Greater Portland a great turnout of volunteers this year, employee volunteers. They had a record-breaking 12,000 of them. And I just wanted to make sure that that's known, because we do hear often that that is an employee's first experience with volunteering for an organization. So they do a great job, and we're quite grateful to them.
No, that's great. And, it's interesting. We're talking about here in Maine and New Hampshire. But the reality is that this is nationwide. Companies are doing this nationwide, and I know the national audience that's out there that will be listening can understand that, this is something that you can do in your community, that you can do in your company, that you can make happen. And we're going to talk about that in a second, but I do know that you wanted to talk a little bit, Janice, about corporate partnership programs.
Well, it's something that we developed a couple of years ago. I had the opportunity to attend the Conscious Capitalism Summit with the president of our company, Nancy Hasselbeck, and she came away with the idea that it would be really helpful to have employees focus our attention, both financial resources and volunteer time, on specific organizations in the community that they truly supported. So while we still support a wide variety of our organizations globally, there are four particular corporate partners that we work with that the employees have chosen. And one of them is the Center for Grieving Children. We've got the Animal Refuge League, Maine Children's Cancer Program, and the Make-A-Wish Foundation of Maine. And employees rallied and said, these are the groups that we want to support, both with a financial contribution and with our time. And we invite them to come in and do lunch and learns, and we encourage employees to volunteer for those groups. And it's really been well received. And again, it shows that volunteerism doesn't have to be pushed from the top down. It can come from the bottom up. And it really is successful that way for us.
No, I think that's great. As we get ready to wrap up the show here in the next few minutes, I'd like to ask you each to come up with a tip, a tip that if an organization is thinking about implementing a corporate volunteer program, And we know we need to get buy-in from the top, even if it's groundswell. Still got to get buy-in from the top, because we all know that a program won't work if we don't have that buy-in. You know, so if you could provide, and I'll go right around the room here, if you could provide a tip or idea that would get somebody started, get them motivated, how to talk about it, whatever you think would be important. So, Ruth, I'm going to start with you.
Sure. Well, we encourage all of our sites to bring a community outreach group together, kind of a grassroots group on site, just to kind of tag into what Janice was saying. That's vital to plugging into what's near and dear to their hearts, and that seems to really just give it some steam.
Do you involve senior management in that type of group?
Nope, this is on a site level. The senior management role is really is reinforcing the value, the import, the focus on it, and so that's where we need their advocacy in order for this to actually be given the attention that it deserves.
Janice?
No, fortunately, at our company as well, the management team's always been supportive of this, but I'm trying to think about how to broach it with a management team that might be skeptical. You know, do I really want people to leave the office for a couple hours a day or whatever? And I think that it's important to make the case that really 2 days out of the year is small money in terms of what you get for return. You get employees who are more enriched, who learn more about the communities that we're involved in, who learn new skills that they can bring back to the workplace, and who really feel more engaged with the organization because they know the organization cares enough about them to support them in the work that they want to do. So that's how I think I would try to pitch it to somebody.
Judy?
I think my best advice would be to roll up your sleeves and get out there and volunteer, because it's the type of thing that it needs to be experienced. You know, we can talk about it in a room saying, yeah, we should do this, which organizations, but just get a small group, a cross-section of people out there, do something, come back and talk about how it made you feel, and you're going to be amazed how it will make you feel.
Well, and there's nothing like doing it, right?
Right.
It makes all the difference. Everybody feels it.
Yep.
And it's the old senses. Get your senses going, everything about it. So, no, I think that's great. Well, I want to thank all of you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
I'll give a quick recap here. We've got Janice Rogers from the Vice President of Human Resources for Diversified Communications, Ruth Lund, VP of Organization Development for Legacy Supply Chain Services, Judith Stark, Corporate Quality Assistance at IDEX Laboratories, which is just right down the road
down the street.
Is really great, and Elise Tipton, the Development Director for the Center of Grieving Children. You guys have been great. I think this topic is really important. I want to thank Elise. She's the one that actually suggested this topic, so a credit to you for doing that. And I want to thank you all for being on the show. And now your HR tip of the week. Do you know what your obligations are as to whether you need or do not need an affirmative action plan? Well, here's a quick answer. If your company has 50 or more employees and a federal government contract or subcontract to provide more than $50,000 a year in goods and services, then you are obligated to prepare annual affirmative action plans and to monitor closely your employment percentages of women and minorities compared to what is available in labor markets in which you operate. You must develop a written affirmative action plan for each of your company's establishments and maintain detailed records about the demographics of your employees and employment transactions, including applicant, new hire, promotions, and terminations. That's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we have a great show talking about the Maine Development Foundation's job report that just came out in January 2013. We're going to be speaking with Maggie Drummond. She's the Program Director for the Maine Development Foundation, and John Doerr, Senior Advisor for Jobs for the Future here in Maine. That's next week on the HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.